Online Trading Academy is a leader in investing and stock trading education. Sign up for a class today to learn proven strategies on how to trade smarter. Text Cairo to 57682 and register for a free workshop in Bellevue and other surrounding areas. Text Cairo to 57682.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Hello and welcome to the Dory Monson Show. I am not Dory. My name is Greg Tomlin, sitting alongside G. Scott. We are filling in today, and we are both happy to be here. How you doing, G?
I'm great. I'm good. I would love to tell you about what happened with my coffee, but nobody wants to hear that. I'm just upset that always the coffee is not filled in the morning time or
Does it
afternoon.
Have a secure top on it, so no spillage?
Yeah, this has a secure top. I'm just talking about it here. Just
I just
need my coffee in the morning, that's all. But, hey, glad to be here.
Hey, reunited and it feels so good. We had a week together on Cairo Nights when I filled in for Zach, and I'm glad we're back at it again. Thank you so much for being here. I got the A-team, Ursula, Nicole, and Andrew. Let's honor Dory's show and his big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
Everybody's talking about it, and that, of course, is the unfortunate incident at a Starbucks in Philadelphia. So what happened? Here's the details first. Two black men walked into a Starbucks in downtown Philly Thursday afternoon, and they just sat down. Very inconspicuous. They asked to use the restroom, but because they hadn't bought any drinks, an employee refused their request. They were eventually asked to leave, and when they declined, an employee then called law enforcement. And right when law enforcement showed up, people pulled out their smartphones and the cameras got rolling. In this clip, you can hear a man named Andrew Yaffe accusing the officers of discrimination. He says it's absolutely discrimination. He continued to question the officers, asking if what they were doing was ridiculous or not.
Is anybody else in this place think this is ridiculous?
This, of course, garnered a lot of attention from other patrons who were at the establishment. Customers kept asking, what wrong did these men do?
What did they get called for? Two black guys sitting here meeting me?
Yes, I
didn't. Well, what did they do? What did they do?
So, yeah, very disturbing scene, and of course, the clips immediately went viral all over social media, and there has been a big outrage campaign against Starbucks, including the hashtag Boycott Starbucks, which took off on Twitter. Gee, I want to get your initial thoughts to this story, just what happened at the very beginning in here. Two guys go in, sit down, denied access to the restroom, cops are called, things get out of hand.
I had my Starbucks early this morning, and I just got to tell you, my Americano was very good. This story is a very unfortunate thing. Very unfortunate where two gentlemen come in. They sit down. After sitting down for a second or two, they want to use the restroom, and that's when the Starbucks employee says, no, basically you have to be a paying customer, and then you know what else ensues after that. When you think Starbucks, there is no Starbucks is the ultimate meet me spot in America,
right?
When you think, hey, we should meet up, the first thing you think of is, where's the closest Starbucks, right? And I think we all can agree with that. And stories like this, they just don't happen. That's why as we continue to talk about this story, I love the way that Starbucks talks about this. Now, when the 911 call, which, by the way, I would love to hear the 911 call of this. I would love to hear what the employee said to the 911 operator when they talked about, hey, there is disturbance and trespassing going on in this Starbucks. Now, with this story and as it unfolds and continues to, you kind of see, I don't think the question is if these two gentlemen were discriminated against, because I believe that they were. Now, the unfortunate, and I say unfortunate because it is, it's unfortunate that so many want to take this time to paint a broad brush over Starbucks as being the culprit in this, as Starbucks being a company that believes in this. One of the reasons, man, that I go to Starbucks, and I'm telling you the truth,
yeah.
This is the truth. The reason why I go to Starbucks is because they know my name. Mm-hmm. That's probably, yeah, the coffee is second, but them knowing my name is first. It's one. It's my biggest Saturday morning ritual.
It's like cheers.
Like, I used to have cereal and cartoons on Saturday mornings. As I get older, it is Starbucks. And as if you know right now, the manager of the Starbucks is no longer employed with Starbucks, and whether it was a mutual agreement or whatever. But the best thing was, and I hope you got sound of this,
yeah,
I love the way Starbucks responded to this. I love the way the leader of Starbucks sits down and has a conversation, looks directly into the camera. Does not take 2 weeks, 1 month, attacks it right away.
Handles the situation. Here's CEO of Starbucks. He said the arrest is reprehensible.
I'll say the circumstances surrounding the incident and the outcome in our store on Thursday were reprehensible. They were wrong. And for that, I personally apologize to the two gentlemen that visited our store. Now, certainly, it's my responsibility to understand what happened and what led to that and ensure that we fix it.
And now more training will be in store for future employees and current employees of Starbucks.
It was completely inappropriate to engage the police. And so clearly there's an opportunity for us to provide clarity. And in addition to that, I'd say there's training. More training that we're going to do with our store managers, not only around the guidelines, but training around unconscious bias. What happened to those two gentlemen was wrong.
And G, you made a lot of great points, if I can interject here for a moment. A couple things you said that were really striking to me. One, this just doesn't happen in America very often. That's one of the reasons I think we're hearing about it, because it is so sensational. It is so outrageous. This was an everyday occurrence back in the 60s. I think the equivalence here being drawn to the civil rights movement of the past is an unfair equivalent. I saw someone on Twitter post a viral photo, one where MLK was being arrested and one where these two gentlemen were being arrested. Times have changed, okay? Let's not denigrate the memory of the civil rights movement by saying that the social and cultural landscape looks anything like it did in Martin Luther King's day. I understand why that picture was posted, but to your point, G, this is so rare. This is not an everyday thing.
Go ahead.
You sound like you're on the edge of your seat.
I don't want you to go too far. Okay. Discrimination happens every day.
Correct.
It happens all the time.
True.
What is rare, and I want to be specific to something, mm-hmm. very specific to something. What's rare is this happening at Starbucks. What's rare is you go to a Starbucks for a meeting to meet someone. Many, many meetings I personally have had at Starbucks where I've gone and just kind of waited and sat down to wait. Matter of fact, don't tell anybody. That's my first date place where I go to. So when I go there, I sit down and I kind of wait, because you don't want to get in the line. And, you know, you want your coffee to be hot. So when the person that you're meeting comes, now, have there been times that I've had to use the restroom? Sure, absolutely. And I know somebody listening has had the same thing, too. I don't want this story and this conversation we're talking about to cloud that there is discrimination that continues to go on, because it goes on all the time. I could give you a story that happened to me I won't get there.
We could talk about anecdotes all day long. What I'm talking about is at an institutional, organizational level, this is extremely rare in this day and age compared to the age of Jim Crow and legal segregation. And no, we are perfectly within our rights to deny service to people of a different skin color.
Right.
So that's why we're hearing about this. We're 2,500 miles removed from Philadelphia, but we're talking about this in Seattle right now. But let's not pretend that this goes on at an organizational level every day in America. We are a much freer society, much more equal society than we have ever been. And so what troubles me about stories like this and talking about them ad nauseum is that we get the impression, oh, we really still are an oppressive nation. No, this was a rogue employee, as it sounds, allegedly, who made a horrible decision. And if she was motivated by racism, she should leave the company. It sounds like it was a she or he. I'm not sure. But that person has already left the company. So to say, oh, look, America's at it again. Our oppressive nation has not cured any ills of the past. I think that's unfair. And I love that what you said. You said, I wish I could hear the 911 call. And the fact is, we don't have the 911 call or the call to the cops. So you're touching on another point there, which is we don't yet have all the information. We have this irresistible modern urge to always, always, always play judge, jury, and executioner with very cursory details of a story. There's a reason we have courts and a legal justice system, because getting to the bottom of a story takes time. It takes a lot of time. And so for us, like you said, to paint a very broad brush here is not the takeaway we should be having from this story. It should be, hey, stupid employee, if that person's racist, they should be gone. And end of story.
You said, but you just mentioned, and in this story, I want to make sure we stay on this story and not any other story outside of this.
Mm-hmm.
But you just said that usually that it takes a lot of time to get to the bottom of a story. Let me ask you this, Greg. From the moment that you saw this story, and you've seen the video, right? Has your mind changed at all from the first time you saw this story? How long did it take for you to come up with an opinion of the video that you saw?
Great question. Love that question. I saw the initial hot takes on Twitter. I saw an initial 10-second video, and I said, whoa. As with everything where mob mentality starts to take over, I always proceed with caution, and I say, I need to read a story about this. I need to get the police's perspective. I need to get Starbucks' perspective. And not only that, I need to wait a few days before I get a more comprehensive view of what goes on.
It took you a few days to come up with an opinion on this?
No, I have an opinion about the initial story, but my broader opinion is hold and wait for a while and see what comes of this. Because all too often, we're called upon to have an opinion right away, right when we see something. Here's a 10-second video. Gee, what do you think? Like, whoa. Okay. Hold on. I don't know. Let me give you a hypothetical, and it's not that far-fetched. I'm not saying it's what happened here, but I could give you 15 different reasons why people might have been asked to leave a store. Maybe it was a barista's first day on the job. And the manager said, you know, we get a lot of people in here all the time that just loiter, and so we're putting an emphasis now on, look, if you're going to hang out here, you have to buy something. Barista gets up there to the counter, first day on the job. People say, can we use the bathroom? And she's thinking, well, I just got hired by this establishment, and I was told by my manager, no, you can't use the bathroom if you don't buy anything. Okay, fine. They go sit down and say they're there for an exorbitant amount of time, and she's thinking, gosh, I really want to keep my job and prove to my manager. And maybe she makes a call to the authority. You just don't know. That's not that far-fetched of a scenario. And again, I am not defending this person here. The only reason I use that hypothetical is to show there are so many factors at play here that we just don't know from 2,500 miles away. And that's why trials and the courts of justice take weeks and months for everything to come to light. So I just refuse to take that urge and take the bait to go, ha, here's a video. What do you think?
So again, how long did it take you to come to a final decision?
I don't have a final conclusion. I'm saying it looks very bad, and it's possible it is very bad.
Do you think that there was discrimination?
Do I think there was discrimination? I don't know the heart or the motivations or the reasoning for this person to have done this.
Starbucks says so.
Starbucks came out within 24 hours. Maybe they led an internal investigation and this person admitted that she was motivated by race. I don't know. I think Starbucks was responding to the public outcry more than the actual incident and wanted to get in front of the story. And so they released a statement.
So you think that Starbucks came out with the statement because they wanted to cater to the masses?
I think they were freaking out with the boycott Starbucks things, with the chants in the street, and getting really freaked out about this, that it was going to take on a life of its own.
Yeah. Well, how about you? You got a note right there. How about you go to the police audio? Let's hear police say, and we'll continue to talk a little bit more about this.
Love it. Philadelphia Police Commissioner Richard Ross explained what happened prior to officers arriving.
According to employees, they had seen these two males come in. They sat down, and after being seated, they decided that they needed to use the restroom. Starbucks said that according to their company policy, they do not allow non-paying members or non-paying people of the public to come in and use the restroom. And so they then asked these two males to leave. These two males refused to leave, and the police were called.
He says the officers asked the men to leave, and they refused.
They asked the males to leave because they're being asked to leave by Starbucks employees. In fact, in an effort to quell the situation, officers actually called for a supervisor so that it would not get out of hand, something that was a good decision. And three different occasions, the officers asked the males politely to leave the location because they were being asked to leave by employees because they were trespassing.
Commissioner Ross says that the officers acted appropriately. This is a final cut here.
It is important for me to say that, in short, these officers did absolutely nothing wrong. They followed policy. They did what they were supposed to do. They were professional in all their dealings with these gentlemen, and instead, they got the opposite back.
I know you wanted to respond to this one more clip Nicole says we have here, G. The commissioner went on to speak as, quote, an African-American.
I will say that as an African-American man, I am very aware of implicit bias. We are committed to fair and unbiased policing, and anything less than that will not be tolerated in this department. I just want to share that here we get implicit bias training for all our commanders, and we push that training down to our officers because it's very, very important. In addition, we send all our new recruits to the African American Museum as well as the Holocaust Museum down in Washington, D.C. We do this because we want people, our officers, our recruits, to understand the minute they come on board. We want them to know about the atrocities that were, in fact, committed by policing around the world. This is important to us.
When the commissioner speaks, I want him to speak as the commissioner. I don't want to hear his opinion as an African-American to get into this story right here. Mm-hmm. Because what you're doing is right now you've taken away that I'm the commissioner of the police department. You've given that part of the statement. And then you come on afterwards to say, as an African-American, I know what bias is. But that's cool. If you want to go ahead and put your opinion into a statement, that's fine. The next thing, I'm gonna be simple with you like this. From the moment that I saw the video, I got right out there and I said exactly what was. This was discrimination. This was unfortunate. This is not what I believe Starbucks is about. I do believe that Starbucks is going to take care and get out front of the situation. My opinion about this story has not changed. Not changed about the situation, mm-hmm. not changed about Starbucks, and which is the reason why I started off this segment by telling you that I went and enjoyed my Starbucks coffee. Because I don't see the difference between myself and what I'm hearing right now is I don't believe Starbucks got out in front and made actions because of the masses. Mm-hmm. I believe Starbucks, this is them as a company. They do not believe in these type of practices. I've been to Capitol Hill. I've been to all the different Starbucks all throughout the city of Seattle. I've seen, and probably you have seen, mm-hmm. all walks of life in Starbucks. I have never seen someone kicked out or the police. How about this? I've never seen anybody handcuffed and arrested right. for being in there, quote unquote, loitering. Because if that's the case, many of us would have been arrested and handcuffed a long time ago. So that's where it is. I don't need courts. I don't need months. I don't need a long time to come up with a very clear and concise reasoning as to what happened. Period, point blank, this was an unfortunate situation. This was a bad situation when an employee took it the wrong way. Where these gentlemen were sitting down, they called the police. The police came, and they were handcuffed. And there was those witnesses that watched it that didn't agree with it as well. So it doesn't take a long time for me to come to that conclusion.
But the whole story hinges on the reasons that they were asked to leave. And you're telling me that after seeing a 10-second or 20-second video, you know the reasons? I think we had seeds planted in our brain because this one white guy is seen in the video going, what, just because they're black? So then we see that and go, oh, yeah, it must be because they're black. We don't know. Are you telling me you know the motivations, the heart, and the reasoning that this person had for asking them to leave? All I'm saying is I don't know that yet. I do not know what's in a person's heart. I don't know her reasons for doing it. Ultimately, I'm saying it looks really, really bad. It looks very bad. But again, we have courts of law and a justice system that takes weeks and months to get every angle of a story to come to a comprehensive, cogent conclusion about this. Now, let me supplement by saying it is entirely possible that this was unjust, awful, and that this person had racist motivations.
Well, you know what?
That's a coherent
viewpoint. How about I keep it simple? We got to get on out of here. How about I keep it simple? Have you ever seen anybody handcuffed in Starbucks, walked out?
Never have.
Okay, that's all.
That's a mic drop right there. It's G. Scott and Greg Tomlin filling in for Dory Monson. So glad you're here. Coming up, we're going to be talking with the one and only Sean Wayans, one of the Wayans brothers. He's going to be appearing at Tulalip Resort and Casino this weekend. We'll talk to him about comedy in the age of political correctness. Coming right up. Stick around.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. If you are on the search for your business's next home, there's simply no hotter place in the country than downtown Seattle right now. I went on a tour with Emily at Industrious Office. It's an amazing workspace right on 6th and Lenora in the heart of all that Seattle has to offer. Visit industriousoffice.com/Cairo or call Emily to schedule a tour. Mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hey there, you're listening to Dory. Did you know that your customers do too? Why don't you advertise here? Give me a call and I'll help you out. Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio, 206-726-6819.
All right, we're back. It's Greg Tomlin and G. Scott on Cairo Radio now. Excited to be joined by actor, writer, producer, director, comedian, a man of many hats, Sean Wayans. He's going to be appearing this Saturday, April 21st, at the Tulalip Resort and Casino right here north of Seattle. Don't miss him. It's part of the Off Color Comedy Tour featuring, alongside David Alan Greer and Tommy Davidson, Sean Wayans. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me. What's up, guys?
I'm looking forward to this. I've never had the opportunity to meet you, but, of course, going back to your time when you were, of course, your brother had In Living Color, so I'm looking forward to it. With this show that's coming up, Sean, what can we expect with this show?
You could expect a lot of laughs and a lot of that fun energy that you've seen us all have when we were doing In Living Color. You know, we're all doing our stand-up separately, but you'll get the vibe when we all come out, and it'll take you back.
So, is it topical? Is it observational comedy, impressions, or a bit of everything?
It's all of that. It's all of that. Everyone has their own style, but everyone is from the same school. You know, we all come from In Living Color. That was our school, and you know, and now the classmates got back together for one night.
I got so many questions about In Living Color, but I want to specifically talk about you. Sean, what I've always liked about you, you kind of been one of those that you can kind of do any and everything. How would you describe your comedy over the years, my man?
What kind of style?
Yeah, yeah.
Is my comedy?
Yeah.
Just like honest, observational, I also do characters and impressions, so it's kind of, you know, I don't want to compare myself to anyone that's out there that, you know, already came before me that's really, really good, but, you know, I grew up on, you know, Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor, and, you know, those guys were my, you know, comedic heroes, so, you know, I kind of like, you know, I'm one of their brats.
So as I said before, a man of many hats. Acting, writing, producing, directing, and a comedian, lots of credentials. As a musician myself, I'm always fascinated with interviews of famous musicians where they talk about whether they like being in the studio more or being out on stage. If you had to pick one, what would you choose out of all of the various roles you've had in your life? Do you like touring? Do you like being out on the road amidst the people? Or do you particularly like isolation and writing and producing?
That's a real tough question. I like both of them at the time that I like them. So when I'm writing, I like to be home writing. When I'm on stage, I'm loving being on the stage. If I had to pick one or the other, I'd probably choose writing just because it's just like I get to be in my house and listen to my music with my comfortable socks on and my blanket.
Right.
Drinking hot cocoa, you know what I mean?
You know, Sean, of course, it was your brother, Kenan Ivory Wayans, that back in the day that made the hit show In Living Color, that had, of course, all of his brothers and sisters, and that was a part of it. It was a great show during that time. When you were there during that time, I'm quite sure this was just, you know, that was just like a day at home for you. But did you know that show would produce so many stars at that time?
And weren't you 19 years old when you were on the show?
Yeah, I was 19. So I was a kid. I was just like a kid in a comedy candy store. You know, I'm around some of the baddest in comedy, just sitting around being a sponge. So I wasn't even thinking about really the future. I was living in the now. I was living in the present. Like, man, look at that. Whoa, that's cool. Oh, I'm going to use that. That's a dope trick. Oh, I have to get, you know what I mean? So I was just there, like, as a student.
Which one of the, all right, now I got to get you, I got to ask a tough one. Outside of your siblings, who was the one that you said that you probably gravitated to the most on the show during that time?
I hung around all those guys. I was, like I said, I was the set brat, so I was the baby, and all those dudes was really, really kind to me. So I was up underneath David Alan Greer. I was up underneath Tommy. I was up underneath Jim Carrey, and all those guys were great to me. So I learned a bunch from all those dudes, and that's why, we're still, together doing, stand-up gig tonight because of that camaraderie.
We're joined by Sean Wayans. He's going to be appearing this Saturday, April 21st, as part of the Off Color Comedy Tour at the Tulalip Resort and Casino. Tickets are available right now. There are just a few remaining at Ticketmaster.com. And Sean, you come from such a talented family, your brothers and sisters, Marlon Wayans, Keenan Ivory Wayans, Damon Wayans, and on and on. You have 9 siblings?
Kim Wayans.
Kim Wayans, yep. Being a part of such a creative and talented family, was there competition? Was there rivalry? Was there contention? You guys have just always seemed to get along with one another, at least in the public eye. But was it like that growing up?
Yeah, we do, and we did. And, there was no rivalry. It was all comedy. We found everything funny, and that's all we thought about was what was funny. Even when we were in trouble with our parents, the other kids was laughing and doing impressions of the kid that was in trouble. So, that's the kind of scenario. That was the kind of surrounding we had. It was all about what was funny. No one was even being calculated to even be competitive. It was about survival and getting a laugh.
Sean, right now they got this, 2018-17. It has been the year of the reboots. You got Roseanne. They remade Roseanne. They remade Fuller House. Full House, call it Fuller House now. Will and Grace. In your opinion,
you know what show coming back for us?
In Vibrant Color.
Wait, what show would you say?
I say, black show they bringing back? Roots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that didn't get that one, but I did. But when you're talking about it, the possibility of In Living Color coming back, what you think about that?
I don't know. I'll never say never.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was a really tough show to do.
Yeah.
The cast we had was super special. And I'm not sure. I know there's talented people out there. I'm not sure if there's people that do all the stuff that those people did on that show.
Well, and In Living Color pushed the envelope. And it was groundbreaking at the time. And speak a little bit about comedy in the age of political correctness. Do you feel
it wouldn't even be fun to, unless they just left us alone and let us do what we do, I wouldn't even want to do that show.
Do you feel
it
the pressure?
It wouldn't be fun to do.
Do you feel pressure on stage now, like you're walking on eggshells when you're performing with so many sensitivities of your audience and issues that cause offense these days?
Listen, I do know that they're out there, but there's no way for me to continue to be funny if I'm sitting around walking on eggshells. I do notice that people are more sensitive, but for my take is, if you're in a comedy club, leave the sensitivity at home. Don't come here to look for a hug. I ain't giving you one. You come to get a laugh, period.
Sean, I mean, I go to a lot of comedy shows, and there's something that I've noticed. I mean, I think you and I are about the same age, which is 25. But anyway, some of the things I noticed over the years, I know in the early to mid-90s, man, I know that when I go to comedy shows, everybody just let loose. They just laughed. But now today, I feel like when I go to comedy shows, people are just like, okay, it's time for you to make me laugh, to make me laugh.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that people just have a hard time letting go?
you got to understand, people, you got to understand the world we're in now. So it's, you know, you got all the stress and the pressures that everybody's dealing with, you know, and then they come out to get a laugh, and then they don't know if it's okay for them to laugh. You know what I mean? There's so many things that they're thinking about now. But usually, like, I'm noticing the people that are coming to laugh, they're laughing really hard, like tears coming out their eyes, like, you know, because they're so bottled up. It's like, you know, people who haven't been with anybody intimately for a long time. Then they get a little bit of intimacy, and they, you know, they don't stop like that.
Lastly, Sean, I have to ask you a question of local interest here. Coming up to Seattle, do you make it up here very often?
I not very often, but I've been up there a few times, and I love it. It's very cool. I love the audiences. They're very smart. They're heavy into the arts, and it's just a cool vibe when it ain't raining.
Yeah, do you go straight from the airport to the venue back to the airport, or do you get some time to do some sightseeing and mingling with the locals ever?
Well, I don't really get to see, but, you know, I get to get in and, you know, go to Starbucks or go someplace and get something to eat and, you know, and then go back to my hotel or chill, you know. Usually when I'm doing my stand-up, it's like my schedule is so tight. It's like I come do my radio shows, I take my nap, I get up, I work out, and then I go do my shows. By the time I'm doing my shows, I don't want to do nothing but go to bed.
Right, exactly. All right, Sean Waynes, thank you so much for making the time. He's going to appear this Saturday at the Tulalip Resort and Casino as part of the Off Color Comedy Tour alongside David Alan Greer and Tommy Davidson, both alums of In Living Color, just like Sean Waynes. Very last question. You're playing at a casino. What's your game, craps, blackjack, or poker?
I don't play.
You don't play? Okay.
I don't gamble.
hey, Sean, neither do I, man. I can't, hey, man. I can't lose $5, man, and I cry, so I don't gamble.
Right? Yeah, I don't have that in me, man. I work way too hard to get my money away.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Sean Waynes. We'll be right back. It's the Dory Monson Show. Greg Tomlin and G. Scott filling in today. Honored to be here. The breaking news this hour here locally pertains to a story that we learned about over the summer. It involved an off-duty police officer named Richard Rowe and a motorcyclist. And there was a confrontation that ensued between the two of them on the side of the road. And this off-duty cop pulled out a gun. It sounded like this.
How you doing?
Oh, what are you doing to me?
What do you mean, what am I doing?
What are you? Hi, why do you have a gun on me? I'm unarmed. I will pull over. I'm unarmed.
Take your ID right now.
I'm going to...
Take your ID out. You move to this bike, I'm going to dump you.
I'm going to put my bike down. I'm going to put it... I'm going to turn it off, and I'm going to get off, okay? Is that all right? Can I take my helmet off?
Very disturbing video, and it was all caught on camera because the motorcyclist was wearing a GoPro. And we have Hannah Scott on the line right now, who's a Cairo radio reporter here. She joins us. She was just at a press conference of the Washington State Patrol. Hannah, can you hear me? It's Greg and G. Scott.
Yep, I'm here, Greg.
So what's the latest regarding this story? The detective Richard Rowe was on paid leave, correct? But they've just issued some breaking news on this story?
Yes, he was on paid leave. The internal investigation resulted in a recommendation that he be suspended without pay for 10 days. But King County Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknett just announced that after her own investigation and talking with him, and her decision is that he will have 5 days, not 10, 5 days without pay. He's already undergone some other training and I believe served that suspension because he is back on the job officially today.
Hannah, what kind of decisions do you think were made in coming up with that? I mean, the recommendation was for 10 days without pay. Now it's 5 days. It seems like obviously it's 5 days less than what was asked for. What's some of the reasons you're hearing that they came to that conclusion?
So I'm going to tell you the big thing here is that this motorcyclist, Alex Randall, when he initially turned over his video and talked to investigators, internal investigators, he described an incident and his video showed a certain amount of what had happened, and he didn't really, it wasn't completely truthful, I guess, on what his speeding and the way he was driving for that whole incident to start in the first place. So basically what Sheriff Joe Hankton said was they got a hold of the full video after getting a forensic study done of his GoPro, and it showed a little bit more information. He got immunity to the prosecutor's office and went ahead and told the truth about that he was speeding, which he doesn't think, by the way, he showed up at his friend's conference. He doesn't think that makes a difference as an excuse for the way that the detective pulled the gun on him and spoke to him. But there's that difference of what he originally said and then what he said after getting immunity was a big cause of this. Essentially, they exonerated this detective on any rules of conduct, misconduct for excessive force. That was not an issue here. They went ahead and sustained decisions that he was kind of not obeying the rules of conduct for swearing at him and being somewhat aggressive with him. But they say, Mr. Joe Hankman, the sheriff, says that he was absolutely detective within his rights to pull the gun because the motorcyclist had motioned towards his waistband in a way that the detective felt he was going for a gun. That motorcyclist, by the way, completely disagrees with that assertion. He called it a lie.
Reporter Hannah Scott, thank you so much for the breaking news info there. Again, King County Sheriff Detective Richard Rowe has been suspended for 5 days without pay regarding an incident over the summer where he was off duty and he pulled a gun on a motorcyclist. And gee, I just have to say, a video only tells part of the story. You got to wait and let the justice system play out here and take eyewitness testimony, consider the video, and then pass judgment on these things. This took almost 7 or 8 months to come to a final conclusion.
So more speed justifies the action.
We got plenty more coming up. We'll talk about it maybe after the break. Greg Tomlin, G. Scott, filling in for Dory.